Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Now guys, my allergies are throwing my whole morning off lately. I mean, tis the season, right? I mean, do I sound different to you? Because I definitely sound different to me. I feel like I'm underwater. Astapro is a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray, and it starts working in 30 minutes while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Now, I use this, and if you struggle with allergies like I do, you should too. Astapro always has my back, and honestly, my nose. I literally use it every time I start getting a flare-up in my nose holes. So get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so that you can Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies. Hey, true crime besties. Welcome back to an all-new episode of Serialistly. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to an all new episode of Serialistly with me, Annie Elise. I hope you guys are having a good week. We have got a lot to talk about today. We not only are going to talk about updates in some ongoing cases, but we're going to talk about brand new cases. And like I said, there's actually a lot to talk about now that I really think about it. I want to start with the Monday episode that we dropped this week. It's on the Karen Reed case. Now, guys, if you have not listened to this episode yet, and if you're not familiar with this case, and do yourself a favor, go back and listen, because it is one of the most controversial cases out there right now. There are so many people who think that there is conspiracy, corruption, cover-ups, while some people believe she truly is guilty. I mean, the poll that I put up over on Spotify, it's pretty split. But anyway, long story short, Karen is basically accused of murdering her Boston police officer boyfriend, yet she's saying, no, I dropped him off at a house party that night and drove away, and he was killed inside, and now these officers, the fellow officers at the house party, are trying to frame me. And I gotta just be honest, there is some compelling evidence suggesting that this might be a cover-up. So listen to the episode if you haven't already and make your own decision, and then come back and let me know what you're thinking. But in addition to that, we're also celebrating 1 year of the podcast. So happy anniversary. And in that episode, we did a giveaway. Again, listen to the episode to get all of the gists and the details on that. But we were doing a giveaway. There's a code word in there where we're giving away some good things. We also have a lot of other things we're giving away over on Patreon. So I'll link all of those things in the show notes for you. The link to Patreon. We're doing giveaways every single day over there this week to celebrate. And then we, of course, did the one in the Karen Reed case. So let's talk a little bit about Chad Daybell for a minute. I mentioned last week that jury selection was starting this week and that it's expected to be 8 to 10 weeks worth of trial. Originally, I thought it was going to probably be at least a minimum of 2 weeks for jury selection. However, earlier this week, Court TV, they had said that they think that opening statements are going to start as early as next week. I don't know if that's really how it's going to pan out. I guess we'll see. But for those of you who don't know who Chad Daybell is, he's currently on trial. He's like this gross, disgusting cult leader man who is accused of killing, I mean, a slew of people, his new wife's children, his wife, possibly maybe even the brother of his wife. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So it's a pretty wild case. So it's going to be interesting to see how this trial pans out. I think he's guilty, but I also have been saying I really think he's going to throw Lori under the bus. I think that's what we're going to see since she's already been found guilty, but TBD. In a fun little twist on that, during jury selection, one juror was asked if they had seen any coverage about the case, and they straight up said that they had watched an episode of mine on 10 to Life. So thank you for watching the coverage. I hope you appreciated it. But now let's move into a very disturbing story coming out of Central California. Now, I hope you guys haven't eaten lately because you're probably going to vomit when you hear this story. It is beyond grotesque and disgusting, but let's jump in. So according to an arrest report, on March 22nd, Kern County Sheriff's Office deputies were called to the Amtrak station in Wasco. They were called there about a person who had been hit by a train. Now, as one of the responding deputies was arriving, Amtrak employees pointed to a man named Rosendo Tellez, and he was walking down the street with an object underneath his sweater. So the deputy approaches this guy because he's not sure whether Rosendo was the injured victim in the collision or what was really going on. But as the deputy got closer, he pulled this object out from underneath his sweater and then dropped it on the floor. Now guys, this object turned out to be a left leg that was severed at the knee. He was arrested right then and there, but authorities, of course, still needed to figure out, like, what the hell is going on here? Whose leg do you have? Why are you just, like, holding it under your sweater like it's a handbag? I don't know. But another deputy who responded to the scene spoke with a construction worker nearby who had three videos of Rosendo with this leg. The worker said that he hit the leg against a piece of construction equipment, which appeared to have blood on it. In one video, Rosendo was, quote, bent over at the waist while holding the leg near his face. Then, after standing up, he, quote, brought the leg up to his face and then briefly touches the leg against his mouth, licking it. If you aren't vomiting yet, guys, I don't know what's going on with you, but that is, like, the most disgusting thing I think I have ever heard. Like, he's just cradling this leg, walking around, bringing it up to his face, like, rubbing it against his cheek, then starts licking it. I mean, foul. Now, in another video, get this, and I'm sorry to make light of this, guys, but it is just so beyond disgusting and, like, outrageous. So, in this other video, he was, quote, cradling the foot and laughing at the person recording him. The arrest report also says that Rosendo said that the leg was his, quote, even though he had both feet. So he picked up the limb and allegedly wanted to take it to the hospital, but he, quote, got scared and then ran when people in the area started yelling at him, which, obviously, my man, of course they're gonna yell at you. You're like this guy holding a leg, stroking it, kissing it. It's weird. And then in yet another video, reportedly he was seen, quote, waving the leg with his right hand and lifting it in the air as to present it. Obviously, there's got to be something at play here with mental health because this is not making any sense. But officers later figured out that the leg belonged to the person who was hit by the train when then a different deputy went to the tracks and noticed a trail of various body parts. Those body parts were all on the tracks until he found the bulk of the body. So a very, very unfortunate event where this pedestrian was struck by the train and then unfortunately was, you know, not, I don't want to say decapitated probably, but dismembered in different ways from the impact. And then Rosendo was cruising along and picked up a leg and, I don't know, had like a little love affair with it or something. So investigators also talked to the train conductor who said that he saw somebody slowly walking with their bike near the train tracks and it looked as if they were talking to somebody else behind him. The conductor said that he sounded the train horn many, many times to try to get the victim's attention in all of this, but somehow he never looked or even acknowledged that the train was coming. So a very unfortunate tragedy that then just had a very odd outcome altogether and kind of gives you pause and makes you go, what the fuck's happening in the world? So now moving into another disturbing case about a 13-year-old killer. So on March 29th, shortly after 12:30 p.m., officers responded to a home in Pennsylvania and they found an unresponsive 44-year-old woman. She was later identified as Tamika Tucker. Now, Tamika, she had visible stab wounds covering her neck, her back, and her head was severely bleeding. She was later pronounced dead at the scene due to all of these horrific injuries, and when the police were there, they also found an 11-year-old at the home. This 11-year-old also had stab wounds on his back. However, the injuries were not life-threatening. So, you might be wondering, who would possibly do this? Well, the police identified a suspect in this, Tamika's 13-year-old daughter. Now, apparently, when she spoke with the police, she allegedly apologized for killing her mother, and she admitted that she stabbed her during an argument, all because her mom took her phone away. According to the arrest warrant, the 13-year-old girl said, quote, I killed my mom, and she'll never forgive me if she's alive. I don't have my phone because my mom took it before our fight. I'm the reason my mom is dead. I don't know how people can do stuff like this and not feel bad about it, quote. Which, yes, a little bit of true statement there. I don't know how people can commit murder and not feel bad about it, so I'm glad she has a little bit of remorse. But also, I don't know people who would murder their mother because they took away their cell phone. Like, what kind of rage and issues are there in order for you to jump like to such severe and crazy actions? So this 13-year-old was arrested and charged as an adult for her mom's murder. And she had additional several charges in addition to the murder charge as well. And, you know, we really talk about cases like this all the time. And I always kind of have the same question for you guys. In situations like this and other murder cases we've talked about, should we charge 13-year-olds as adults? Or is their brain not fully developed? Should they have the opportunity to at rehabilitation, at reform? And I want to know what you guys think. So I will put up a poll maybe over on Spotify, or just let me know in the Q&A section. But at what point do we decide, should they be charged as an adult or not? And to me, honestly, in this case, I don't really know what the answer is. Like, a case like Aiden Fucci, it's clear as day, in my opinion, why he should be charged as an adult. It was premeditated. He planned this. He talked about it to friends. He showed no remorse all the way until he was in the back of that cop car sending Snapchats laughing about it. Like, you are a psychopath, in my opinion. I don't know if I would medically diagnose him as that, but you know what I mean. However, a situation like this where, I don't know, not to make an excuse, but if her brain's not fully formed and she doesn't have control over impulses and things like that, if she really was just enraged that her mom took away her cell phone and like acted in the heat of the moment, again, not to excuse it or say it's okay, but like, is there possibility of reform for somebody like that because they aren't fully developed? I don't know what the answer is. And that's why I am not in the legal field, because I just don't know the answer. And if you're not familiar with that Aiden Fucci case, guys, it is a horrific tragedy where he killed his 13-year-old classmate, Tristan Bailey, in like a gruesome way. The details are so twisted and disgusting, but I'll link that full episode here in the show notes for you so that you can be familiar with that case if you want. Now, moving on to a case I talked on my TikTok account about last week. It's a case about this girl named Amanda Nenegar. So on March 22nd, a very, very mysterious and puzzling 911 call was released by the police investigating the disappearance of Amanda. She was a missing 27-year-old girl from Blythe, California. So she was last seen on February 28th at 3:44 a.m. on surveillance video. But her car was later found in a desert area 12 to 15 miles away from where that surveillance frame was taken. And it was that same place where she called 911 to report that she thought that she fell asleep at the wheel. Now take a listen to this 911 call, because it is really, really weird.
911 Emergency, what are you reporting?
I think I fell asleep at the wheel.
Okay, where at?
Coming from Anza. I was tired, so I went to go pull over, but I think I like ran off the road.
So you had an accident?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you on Highway 78?
Possibly. But I climbed to like a high mountain and I'm wearing pink.
So police think that her car must have been stuck in a ditch. But what's also weird is that the ditch was nowhere near where her car was actually found. Also, Amanda kept saying that she was near a highway, except her actual location was a remote desert with mountainous terrain without any paved roads or anything of that nature. So it's coming out that even though Amanda gave the police her location, California authorities had been searching in the wrong area, 30 miles away. And then when they found Amanda's car, she wasn't in it. So the search for Amanda was on, but unfortunately, her body was found this week, nearly a month after she went missing. She was found naked and under a tree about 1.5 miles away from her abandoned car. Now, because her clothing was found not too far from her body, investigators believe that she may have been trying to cool off, and it's possible that she died from exposure. The sheriff's office said that the investigation is ongoing and pending an autopsy, and that'll determine what her cause of death truly was. But right now, they want the public to avoid spreading rumors and making assumptions based on what really happened. But I have to say, I mean, what a massive drop of the ball here. You found the car. She wasn't inside the car. You knew that she made this distressful 911 call and that she was missing. And you search all around. First of all, actually, you search in the wrong area, 30 miles away. But you find her car, and her body's only 1.5 miles away, and you didn't find it. And again, the desert is the desert is the desert. There's not a lot of crazy terrain. Sure, there's dirt, there's rocks, there's boulders, there's peaks, valleys, whatever. But, like, not that difficult to do a search. There's also not a lot of snowfall, nothing like that. Like, I just don't understand how she was missed. And that's really, really devastating for her family, especially because she made that call. She knew she was in trouble. And had there been maybe a different approach to the search effort, maybe she would have been found and maybe she would still be alive. So please keep her family in your thoughts and prayers. I have a question for you. Do you ever have trouble sleeping? Or do you like wake up in the middle of the night randomly, but then you can't fall back asleep because your mind is racing, it's going a million miles a minute, and you just kind of have this like gross morning the next day where you're groggy and you're tired and you didn't get good sleep? That used to happen to me all the time. But about a year ago, my husband introduced me to Beam Dream Tea, and guys, it has changed my life. I drink it about 30 minutes before I want to fall asleep and be asleep, and it's like this nice little dessert treat right before bed. And even though it tastes like dessert, it's only 15 calories and 0 grams of sugar. They have so many amazing flavors too. They have chocolate peanut butter, cinnamon cocoa, sea salt caramel, which is my personal fave because it tastes like hot chocolate. But it's so good because it puts you to sleep, you don't wake up groggy, you feel refreshed. It's also stopped all of my middle of the night wake ups where I'm having a hard time going back to sleep. Better sleep has never, ever tasted better. And today, my listeners get a special discount on Beam's Dream Powder. They're science-backed, healthy hot cocoa for sleep with no added sugar. And guys, the numbers don't lie. In a clinical study, 93% of participants reported Dream helped them sleep better. And like my husband got me hooked on it, I have gotten my brother hooked on it, my sister-in-law, my mom, so many of you listeners. It is so good. So if you want to try Beam's best-selling dream powder, get up to 40% off for a limited time when you go to shopbeam.com/annieelise and use code annieelise at checkout. That's shopbeam.com/annieelise and use code annieelise for up to 40% off. Now, there's another case coming across my desk, guys, that so many of you are baffled by and have been requesting coverage on and opinions on, and it's these Kansas women who are missing. So police are looking for two missing Kansas women, a 27-year-old named Veronica Butler and a 39-year-old named Jillian Kelly. Veronica and Jillian were traveling from Kansas to Oklahoma to pick up Veronica's children and take them to a birthday party. But the thing is, they never made it there. Instead, the car that they were in was found in a very extremely isolated area of the Oklahoma panhandle near the southern Kansas border. Now, when Veronica's fiancé and Kelly's husband heard that the women never made it to that birthday party, Kelly's husband, who also appears to be a pastor, drove with another pastor to see if they could find the women at all and retrace where they might have been heading. So as they were searching and trying to get answers, they ended up pulling up to a scene and they saw one of the women's cars and it was surrounded by police and it had been completely abandoned. So imagine like how frightening that would be if you're out searching for these women and then you find the car, it's abandoned and police are just like swarming it and circling it. So now the Oklahoma Bureau of Investigation is investigating their disappearances and have described this situation as a, quote, suspicious disappearance. Additionally, they've now classified their disappearances under endangered missing advisories. So that alert deemed both women, quote, at risk. However, there's really not much that has been shared publicly other than the details I just described.
Not a lot of information in this case, but a whole lot of attention being paid to it by the media, and it's now caught national media attention. What stands out to you about what little we are hearing from police at this point?
Well, I think we're hearing little, but in a sense, Marnie, we're sort of hearing a lot. When you hear the word suspicious, when you see that schools are being shut down and then other precautions are taken, I think they're certainly worried that there might be somebody that has caused these women harm. Also, Marnie, a huge obstacle for law enforcement is the ruralness. You saw those photos there. I grew up in Kansas. We always teased that the national tree was the telephone pole. There is nothing there, and that's going to really limit the capabilities of digital analysis of their cell phones.
You know, in missing cases, we tend to go immediately to family and friends, and in the days following a disappearance, they want to talk, right? They want to say, this is my person, here's what they look like, share as much information as possible in the hopes of bringing them home. In this case, we're hitting a brick wall where police are now telling family and friends, don't talk to the media. Why might that be?
I think that might be because they don't want widespread speculation and accusations being launched as they're in the midst of this investigation. Marnie, it's very concerning, though, that this area would be a very unique area for some sort of random strike. In other words, if these ladies were harmed in any way, it is likely going to be someone that they know and are familiar with.
So Oklahoma State Bureau of Investigation appears to be the leading agency on this, but we are dealing with a state line near where the car was found. So you've got multiple agencies involved. How does that coordination work in an investigation like this, Jennifer?
Well, wherever that vehicle has been found, that's going to be where venue is established as opposed to where they lived. So they're looking for where that crime, if there is a crime here, was committed. And judging from where the vehicle was found, that is why venue has been established with Oklahoma at this point.
What would you be looking into right now with evidence? I mean, the car has to be the most critical clue at this point.
The car is critical. You're looking there for any DNA that would not be of these women or of the people associated with that car. Obviously, I still would be looking at any digital analysis. I also want to see text messaging. Who knew they were making this trip between Kansas and Oklahoma that possibly could have targeted them? What's the relationship in terms of this custody battle? Whenever I hear custody battle and see a mother go missing in this way, that is the number one action point I would begin at.
Do you expect that police will change their strategy and offer an update to the media depending on how much more time passes? I mean, we're now several days into this search.
I do expect that, Marnie. I think it's very important for transparency in this situation because the people that live in this area are likely very concerned. Is there somebody out there capable of causing harm to these two women? Are they capable of causing harm to others? So I think it's very important that law enforcement does give updates.
According to the alert, Veronica is 5'4" tall with red hair and green eyes, and she wore a blue short-sleeved shirt, denim shorts, and shoes by the brand Hey Dude when she disappeared. She also has several tattoos, including a Chinese symbol on her left forearm and a sunflower on her left shoulder. Now, Jillian, she has brown hair and blue eyes, and she was seen wearing a long-sleeved shirt, whitewashed blue jeans, and tan or beige-colored shoes when she went missing. So anybody with any sort of information about the women's whereabouts are urged to contact the Oklahoma Bureau of Investigation. Whether it's a tip, a lead, a sighting, any information, please send it their way. Now let's talk about Drew Peterson for a second. Not to be confused with Scott Peterson, but in my opinion, equally a loser, douchebag, dirtbag. Both Petersons are accused of murdering their wives, but let me give you the rundown of Drew Peterson, because while I think so many people are familiar with a lot of these cases, I end up always being a little bit surprised that some people aren't familiar. So let me give you the breakdown of Drew Peterson, and then if you want a full deep dive, definitely let me know either on Spotify Q&A section or in the Apple review section, because it is a really like twisty, turny case. There's a lot of speculation. It's kind of a roller coaster. But basically, Drew Peterson was found guilty of murdering his third wife, Kathleen. This was a few months before their 2003 divorce. Now, he had been cheating on Kathleen, and the circumstances around her murder were like beyond shady, but he had been cheating on her with this girl, Stacy. That's when they were going to divorce, and he ended up going on to marry Stacy. So a little bit of a backstory on Stacy and how she got involved with Drew. Like I said, he was cheating on Kathleen with her, but she was also really young. She was only 23 years old when she disappeared, and she had a pretty rough child life, and so she found Drew, who was this older man, much older than her. I think he was like 49 at the time, and she was only 19 years old, and so she was really taken to the fact that he was established, he was mature, she kind of had that, you know, almost that figure of like taking care of her, and she was just swept away in all of this. So they started having the affair, Kathleen and he divorce, and then she marries Drew. And guys, Drew also was a police officer, which probably also contributed to his sliminess in terms of thinking he could get away with things and cover things up. Not to say that all police officers are slimy, obviously, but the ones who end up like using that to their advantage if they're going to murder somebody or commit crimes themselves, you get what I'm saying. But let me talk to you about the details regarding Kathleen's death, because what was so shady about it, and he didn't get charged with it for quite some time, actually. Everybody had ruled it as accidental, I believe it was, until then Stacy went missing, which I'll get to. But anyway, Kathleen, her whole body was bruised and it was found in a dry bathtub in her home in 2004, but she had this really large gash to her scalp. Now, as I said, the initial cause of death was found to be accidental drowning, but there were still some red flags about it. I mean, it was a dry bathtub. She had a gash in her head. She was bruised all over. It looked almost as though she had been placed in that bathtub. But then in 2019, when Stacy disappeared, the fourth wife, Drew Peterson, ended up being indicted for Kathleen's murder after a second autopsy showed that there had been evidence of a struggle. However, with Stacy's disappearance, it wasn't ruled that she had been murdered. She had been missing. And a lot of the speculation kind of led in the direction of Drew killing Kathleen, of course, and then starting to like figure out how to be smarter. And so then when he wanted to get rid of Stacy, he hid her body. I think some people even suggested that he put her body in a drum and like either dropped it in the ocean or maybe even buried it. But it's kind of been this like cold case for several years now where nobody's really had any answers. So during the course of Stacy and Drew's relationship, he would always accuse her of cheating on him. He was very controlling, and she ultimately decided, like, look, we have kids together, but I'm out. You are dangerous. I'm paraphrasing here, guys, because, again, I can give you a deep dive if you want it. But then she disappeared. Well, now Stacy's sister is speaking out, and she believes that they have found her remains. Listen to this clip.
Cassandra, thank you for being with us. You have been relentless. Looking for your sister and what happened here. And this is a bombshell tonight. The fact that these remains have been found in the canal there where Alex was just standing. How did this all come about, Cassandra? Walk us through it.
Basically, I've never stopped. We've had numerous sonar searches, and back in 2007, November 19th in 2007, we found a female body, which was basically my sister. You could see the hair waving, the breasts and her legs. She was becoming buoyant, but not buoyant enough to come to the top of the surface because she was weighed down. She was at that location for 3 days. State police were notified, and they didn't do anything. They were sent everything. They had the coordinates, and then me and my team, we were threatened to be arrested if we acted on anything. And after the third day, she was gone, and we just went on continuing searching. Then the spring of 2008, we expanded and continued. And we found her down the canal, resting on the bottom. You can see decomp, you can see decomp and the flesh going. You can actually see a fish above her body. She still had flesh, but she lost her eyes and her feet were gone. It was kind of turning skeletal. Informed the state police again. Nothing. I think I fought them for like a year, and then they just went out and did a blind dive one day and didn't even like re-sonar it. Then the technology keeps getting better and better, and I looked for the best of the best, and that's when I found the one and only sonar ROV and had it brought in from Alaska, and that's what we got. And that was just out of
that
sheer luck.
That is incredible. Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. I mean, I'm just looking at the images, Cassandra, and the fact that you had to find this sonar RV from Alaska to come down and that you were able to locate these remains, it is unbelievable. And I don't understand. I'm just trying to understand, like, what are the police doing? If you were able to locate the skull and other bones and you know where they are, I would think there'd be a dive team in the water tonight going to collect the remains.
No.
Like, what is going on?
So basically, we had the ROV sitting on top, just in that position, sitting on the bottom. And I had called state police. I had called the state's attorney. They came out. They seen it. I even set up a tent because it was cold out. And we showed them everything. And then we just stood there and they just said, well, you expect us to come out tonight or right now? And I just get pushed back. And then I had to call them every day. Then I called the FBI. And finally, I got the FBI to come in 3 months later after I was on that. And they just kind of did a blind dive and floated around. I have that on video. They were all just floating on the top of the water the whole time. And then when I was there, they didn't even talk to me and they treat me like a criminal. So, and then at the end, they told me that that area is cleared. So that area is cleared. Now I'm just trying to get some funds and get that equipment back. And they said it's clear, so there's no crime scene. I'll walk into state police with her skull in my hand. It's somebody's. It's not, I don't know if it's my sister, but it's definitely somebody. Somebody's loved one that needs to be coming home. So
they say the area is cleared, but you've got the sonar RV there with the images.
Yeah.
I mean, both of those things can't be true. And how far
that
away
that
could that
was
have floated? I mean...
It didn't. It covers with
silt. They said it was
instantly.
A rock.
Yeah, they said that was a rock. And I actually have video footage of that when we went to move the ROV, that we actually bumped the skull and you could see the underside of the skull, like the, you know, the bottom of your skull. It fell off. But it gets re-silted over very quick.
Now, this case is very, very sad because, I mean, Stacy's family for over, what, a decade, I believe it is now, have been adamant that they believe that he murdered Stacy, but there's just no proof. Yes, he's been charged with his former wife's murder, but he hasn't been charged with anything related to Stacy. So it's going to be very interesting to see if these remains do prove to be Stacy's or if maybe it reignites some interest in the case and we do get some answers or maybe there's new tips, new leads, new searches. But hopefully her family is able to get a resolution to this because it is very, very tragic. And again, let me know if you want a full deep dive on that. So once again, another week where there is no shortage in news in the true crime world. We'll see if opening statements start in the Daybell trial next week, but my guess is maybe it'll be pushed out a little bit. And Karen Reed's trial is supposed to start on the 16th, and I'm wondering if that's still going to happen. Other than that, like I said, we did a massive giveaway in that Karen Reed episode, and we are going to be announcing the 5 winners to that giveaway on this upcoming Monday episode, so definitely tune into that to see if you are a winner. And we also are doing a live Q&A this Friday over on Patreon, so if you feel like you want more access, you want access to giveaways, more perks, more bonus content, our private group chat, all the things, you can do that over through Patreon, and if you do it now, you'll be a part of the live Q&A, and you can ask me questions directly, and we'll talk, and we'll hang. And if you feel like you still need another true crime fix for your week, we still have our Friday bonus ad-free episodes. You can get access to those through Apple Podcasts or also through Patreon. So all of the links to all the stuff will be in the show notes. All right, guys, thank you again for tuning in to another episode of Serialistly with me, Annie Elise. Thank you so much for joining, and until the next one, be nice and don't kill people, and I will talk with you again very, very soon and be back with you on the mic Monday with a brand new deep dive case. All right, take care, guys. Bye.